What I mean by having it obliquely, going into this whole thing all over again, over and over and over again, about the question of whether it is human nature, whether it is more natural, whether it is, there is something inherently characteristic about the female nature, which is different from the inherent characteristics of the male nature and all the rest of it. So you have to really walk all around that question in order to really get at the thing, I believe, that really bothers people about that whole transition. And part of it is by going into the physical anthropological evidence that we have to prove that at one time it didn't exist, even if we can't explain easily and succinctly why it's, you know, the process of the change. We can at least begin to prove that it was different at one time. And we can prove that even now it is different in some respects in other countries, but it doesn't have to be that way. So I think that many times we have to go at that particular question, which is the $54,000 question, you know, it comes up all the time, from many different angles, and attack it from the whole question of human nature, the biological nature, you know, childbearing, and all the rest of that stuff, in order to really get at the things that are bothering people.
Well, that's why I said this is a very big subject, because it's a multifaceted thing. It's also very dialectical. I try to give at least from the point that she took it, on the material basis, you see. But there's another aspect. She points out the question of human nature, you know. Very important things that are coming up for review. But what's happening in the women's liberation movement is somewhat unique, is that it, through its impact, everything is boiling up to the surface. There is nothing left anymore unsaid or in later perhaps undone. It's a very curious and interesting phenomenon. What are the biological differences? What are the social differences? What are the future? Was the future of the sexes even apart from the material basis, assuming socialism and so forth. So, and the great curiosity on these subjects is what interests me. It's enormous, and it's endless. And I think it's exactly appropriate to a women's liberation movement. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I was looking at that. I think a lot of the reasons of many women in the movement who thought about this whole question and who reject the idea that biology nonetheless feel that there's a material reason is that men were stronger than women physically. And that's how it happened, that men, basically all men overpowered women and established their dominance. And I think at least part of it is true in the sense of iron was discovered and weapons became more sophisticated, and as men began to herd, there were problems with other tribes, and men's status was elevated by their ability to, take control of a certain herding area and, you know, get the other tribe away. And then there was the whole aspect of, as surplus developed and became possible for the tribe, I think the tribe at first they had slaves. And an individual ownership, and a lot of the women in women's liberation focus in on that whole aspect, I think, in a fairly unclear way, and make it seem as if all men were involved in this plot.
Let's discuss this question of which is why men are stronger, and is the fact that they're generally physically stronger a key to their superiority? We had this in San Francisco, didn't we? We just got a little ways on it. And there are some women who take the floor and they claim with great justice that it isn't true. It's a cultivated trait, and that's true. That if you take the life of a hard-working woman, of the proletarian class and the weight she has to lift and the things she has to do. I don't know whether a man in a steel plant with some automatic equipment is any less strong than women like that when they're cultivated into that strength. A great many women, however, especially of the middle classes, are cultivated into a weaker position. They just don't have to do that kind of work, and you can't argue against the fact that if you're walking on a street in general, some man may be stronger than you are and can knock you down if you're a woman. It's a fact of life that faces you, and it's clear. But to me, this is sort of so that I would say, and I agreed when the question came up, that the fact that first, physical strength is not a measure of superiority, except that in that sense that you are physically stronger than somebody else who is physically a little less, and so what? Doesn't extend to every other, doesn't explain the social superiority of men, doesn't explain chauvinism, doesn't explain anything. Explains that in some cases they're a cultivated trait is makes a man physically stronger than women. But it isn't true all the time, and it doesn't mean that women cannot be just as physically strong as men because it has been demonstrated. There's some women that can knock them out, too. All right. Now, what is the... I'll come to you in just a minute. What is this fetish about strength? Let me give you a little historical picture on strength. There was a time when... men, just speaking of men, had to be very strong. They had to wear this tremendous amount of armament, and they had to fight, and they had to do all this kind of brute stuff, and for whatever reasons, you know the reason. Or in mines, or in hard labor factories, they had to work to the maximum of their strength, and so forth. But why the fetish about it? If we can make mechanical arms and hands, and derricks and other mechanical means for lifting great weights, why does the human body have to be a thing of that kind? What is the fetish about, even for men? So that men who are not engaged in all this hard work, and I saw something the other day that absolutely flabbergasted me right outside of my window. I saw tons and tons of rock in a huge thing, lifted up by one man who was wearing a big watch and short sleeves and short pants, one man in the cab who wielded this thing, I don't know the names of them, and lifted that monster up to his truck and then dumped another truck down and all done in 10 minutes. So why does he have to be that strong as to shovel all that, he or and a thousand others, to shovel it all onto that truck when the mechanical arm can do all the lifting? So that's another aspect of the question of just pure strength, you know, physical strength. There was a question coming in here.
I think that it's important to differentiate between physical strength in relation to work and physical strength in relation to personal combat, because there's no doubt that women can do virtually any job. It's a man's issue in terms of relating her strength to work, because in the 19th century she was a miner and all the other things that men were. But the fetish around physical strength of development developed in the present movement, I think, because the female is isolated in the family unit, and in that situation she can be physically coerced by the man who, in combat, is frequently stronger than her, and that's the reason for the fetish. And that we have to explain very simply that we must differentiate between strength is related to work and strength is related to personal combat.
Yeah.
But what I would like to know is if anyone can explain to me when there was the growth of a surplus of product, did that mean that it was not so necessary, for instance, for men to hunt, and were they more frequently in contact with the female organized community, and was their actual physical presence one of the reasons why a small section of the male community could appropriate this surplus?
That came up over a considerable period of time. The first appropriation above the primitive sharing of everything, which was shared in equal. But the minute you got into a little bit higher economy, you had to do big construction, irrigation projects, and a whole lot of things. You had to assemble your working force in wholly different ways and under different conditions. You needed surplus. The surpluses that came in were ways in which these people who were doing specialized work were fed. So a certain group of people would do the agriculture or the herding, and then other groups of people would do the metallurgy and other specialized forms. Wholly new series of divisions of labor came into existence. And surpluses were, in the beginning, used in order to provide for these new divisions of labor. But then the surpluses grew beyond that into from being given to those who were conducting these operations and distributing them, and they became into private property. There are some books on this, in this process of early agricultural society and so forth. It gives you a line of development there, and all you have to do is interpret it according to the Marxist basis. But it was a process over several thousand years.
It is possible then, you think, that the actual physical presence of a fairly large number of men could have done something to contribute to the procreation of the by section of the male sex as opposed to the female sex.
I don't think I quite follow you.
Well, I'm not even sure I'm asking the right question.
In the earliest stage, the men were the directors of a number of operations, and men and women both worked, but the family system was also coming into existence. It was now being done on a farm family basis for them. It wasn't an industrial society as yet, you see. So it wasn't a question of the oppression of women as we know it, if that is what you're getting at. No, there were...
The big question of why was it a section of the male sex as appropriated goods? And one of your arguments was that because the communal society were so advantageous for women.
Yes, well, isn't that the question she asked?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But also, I'd like to know, is it a possibility that the section of the male sex appropriated the goods? Not only because women found communalism advantageous, but also because maybe they've been drawn more predominantly into the community. They were no longer hunting, for instance, as much as they were.
Well, naturally. This period we're speaking of is the period at which hunting now begins to be tossed aside,
yes,
and becomes a sport. We are now have agriculture and stock raising and wholly new divisions of labor. And it is absolutely essential to elevate society to have such divisions of labor. Not the whole population earning enough for a day or a week's food supply for themselves, but a sector, a mechanized farm, making enough food to provide for all the people in all of the different categories of the divisions of labor. You cannot, as I said earlier, build socialism on an economy of scarcity and poverty. You have to do it on its very highest technological level, which we have reached. But the process by which we went from this earlier small-scale surpluses, inadequate surpluses, and surpluses that also came into private possession, to the present day, you can get many books on that. There are any number of books that can give you that view of it. Yes, did you want to speak on this?
Another question.
Oh.
Could we open up another question? You divide women into classes, modern day women into plutocracy, middle classes, and proletariat. I wonder, how do you place women who are housewives into these classes? My second question is, what are the middle classes in relation to production? Who are these women? What do they do for a living? If they don't work for a living, what do they do? What is their function?
Do women belong to the different classes? Yes, they do. If they're in the wealthy class, they belong to it either in their own right or through the right of, by way of their marriages, and so on. Well, that's a fact. I mean, I'm not making that up. Now, how How do, what about housewives? Where do they belong? Yes. Well, these women, I guess even if up in the wealthy class, if they have to fill out a census form, I imagine what they have to put on is housewife. These are social categories that I didn't invent that exist today, and these are to mean something to those who put out the censuses. That's the way they're defined. All women are defined as housewives, even those who work. If they have a husband and they live in a home, they're defined as housewives. Single women, I guess they don't define as housewives. Single women, I don't know how they define. I don't know what the census category is for it, but I will find out. Now, men aren't defined as house men, single or married. They have occupation.